Hi there, folks. This is Nick Solomon of the Bevis Frond. Just having slurped down some cherry juice. How do they make that? Take out the pips, I suppose, and wash it. Anyhow, you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acre. And legally, we're clear. Hooray. Have fun.
If you can't make your local town meeting but want to...
Hi, I'm Ronald Weaver from Santa Monica. You're listening to WGXC Acre.
Hi, this is Linda Tripp, 4-H educator for Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties. Visit the Catterskill Gallery at Columbia Greene Community College in October to view the 4-H art exhibit showcasing block prints from over 75 4-H club members. Join us for the opening reception on Thursday, October 10th from 5 to 7 p.m. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal program and employment opportunities.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Science of Aesthetics Laser and Med Spa, offering a wide variety of multifaceted cosmetic services at 810 Union Street in Hudson. Consultations are available. Information at 518-697-5390 and scienceofaesthetics.net.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Starbuck of Columbiaville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
He was on his way home from Candletop. Been 2 weeks gone and he thought he'd stop at Webb's and have him a drink before he went home to her. Andy Wolo said hello and he said hi, what's doing, whoa, said sit down, I've got some bad news, it's gonna hurt. Said I'm your best friend and you know that's right, but your young bride ain't home tonight. Since you've been gone she's been seeing that Amos boy Seth. Got mad and he saw red, and Andy said, boy, don't you lose your head, 'cause to tell you the truth, I've been with her myself. That's a night that the lights went out in Georgia. That's a night that they hung an innocent man. Well, don't trust your soul to no backwoods southern lawyer, 'cause the judge in the town's got bloodstains on his hands. Well, Andy got scared and left the bar, walking on home 'cause he didn't live far. See, Andy didn't have many friends and he just lost him one. His brother thought his wife must have left town, so he went home and finally found the only thing Papa had left him, and that was a gun. He went off to Andy's house, slipping through the backwoods quiet as a mouse. Came upon some tracks too small for Andy to make. He looked through the screen at the back porch door, and he saw Andy lying on the floor in a puddle of blood, and he started to shake. Well, the Georgia patrol wasn't making their rounds, so he fired a shot just to flag them down. And a big-bellied sheriff grabbed his gun and said, why'd you do it? And the judge said guilty in a make-believe trial, slapped the sheriff on the back with a smile, said, supper's waiting at home, and I gotta get to it. That's the night that the lights went out in Georgia. That's a night that they hung an innocent man. Well, don't trust your soul to no backwoods southern lawyer, 'cause the judge in the town's got bloodstains on his hands. Well, they hung my brother before I could say the tracks he saw while on his his way to Andy's house and back that night were mine. And his cheating wife had never left town, and that's one body that'll never be found. See, little sister don't miss when she aims her gun. That's a night that the lights went out in Georgia. Oh, oh, oh. That's a night that they haunted the innocent man. Uh-huh. Well, don't trust your soul, but no backwoods southern lawyer.
Good evening, ladies and gents. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. I'm Alana Medlock, your host. This is There, There, a monthly program celebrating performance and performance sounds. We have a pretty special show for you tonight. It's a family affair. There's a whole bunch of special guests here in the studio. I'm very honored to be joined tonight by the Medlocks, all the way out from LaPorte, Indiana. They're also, full disclosure, they're also my mom and dad. So, hi, Mom, Dad.
Hi there.
Hi, good to be here.
Thanks for coming. We also have a very special guest DJ in the house. It's Jeff Economy, host of Snack Point Charlie. Hello, Jeff.
Good evening.
Also part of the family, my best one. Thank you all for being here tonight. The theme this month is storytelling. And a few of the people in this room have some things to say about storytelling, some stories to share. We're also in a little bit going to have another special guest call in, Dre Campbell, who's a very accomplished storyteller and has now a new podcast about storytelling. She'll be calling into the studio a little bit later. We're going to hear some story songs. We're going to talk a little bit about what storytelling involves, who does it, why. Let's just ease on into it with some more sounds.
Of a summer night in the land of the dollar bill, when the town of Chicago died and they talk about it still. When a man named Al Capone tried to make that town his own, and he called his gang to war with the forces of the law, I heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night she called. And the sound of the battle rang through the streets of the old East Side, till the last of the hoodlum gang had surrendered up or died. They were shouting in the street and the sound of running feet. And I asked someone who said, about 100 cops a day. I heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night she Chicago died. Brother, what a night it really was. Brother, what a thought it really was. Glory be. I heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago died. Brother, what a night the people saw. Brother, what a thought the people saw.
was no sound at all but the clock upon the wall. Then the door burst open wide, and my daddy stepped inside, and he kissed my mama's face, and he brushed her tears away. The night Chicago died. Yes, indeed, the night Chicago died. The night Chicago died. Brother, what a night it really was. Brother, what a fight it really was. Glory be, the night Chicago died.
Hello, this is WGXC. You're listening to There, There, and that wonderful track was queued up by guest DJ Jeff Economy. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Ilana.
What was that song we just heard?
Well, that song is one of the dumbest pop songs of the 70s, The Night Chicago Died, by a band from Nottingham, England called Paper Lace. And being from Nottingham, that's probably why they didn't know that there is no east side of Chicago.
Oh, it's called Lake Michigan.
Yes.
Wow. So why did they think it, you know, they knew something to say about Chicago? Think they visited or something?
Well, because Chicago's cool.
Was it cool in 1970? Really? 77.
I have no idea why they thought that was a good idea.
Well, that was a very charming story song that I haven't heard before. And at the top of the show, there was another track that you started us off with. What was that?
That was The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia by Vicki Lawrence, who was a regular on the Carol Burnett Show around the time that was a hit in 1973. And she had a little side career there for a while with music. I don't know what it was about the early 70s and these story songs that all take place at night. But clearly, the marketplace called for it.
Yes. Well, you know, we're talking about stories tonight. Storytelling is the theme. We usually do a theme every month on this show, There. You know, it's nighttime right now here in Acra, New York. We're broadcasting live from the Acra studio at the Waveform Study Center. Night is descending upon us, so I think we're getting into the mood. The birds are chirping, though this track... this is not the birds from outside. This is the English countryside, apparently. These are our synthetic birds that are, you know, adding some nighttime chirps to the situation.
My illusions are shattered.
Yes.
First I find out there's no east side of Chicago, and now the birds are fake.
Yes. This is one of the things that happens sometimes when you tell stories. A new understanding of reality emerges.
Wait. We can understand about reality from hearing lies?
Yes. Yes, I say yes. This is possible. You just have to use your brain and, you know.
This is all getting so much more complicated than I thought.
Yes. All right. Well, let's go back to something a little simpler. Let's go back to the beginning. Here we have in the studio, the beginning of my existence is due to Stephanie Medlock. Welcome, Stephanie.
Yes, you are one of the finest things I've ever done.
Oh, say that again. I think I had your mic off.
I said you're one of the finest things I've ever done, so I'm glad.
Wow, that's... Thank you. That's high praise. You've done a lot of fine things in addition to your career as a novelist and university administrator for many years. You have in more recent years become a professional storyteller. When did that first start? When did you first sort of become?
It was 2012 and I took a class in storytelling and I realized, oh my God, I can do this. I love this. My whole life is basically a whole bunch of stories, and I like calling them up at will.
That's pretty exciting. Where was the first class that you took?
It was in Michigan, in Three Oaks, Michigan, a lovely little theater called the Acorn, and they had classes there, and a group of people who got together, and we all took the class, and then, bam, we got together and formed our own storytelling group called Indigan, the sort of combination between Indiana and Michigan.
Right, because you're right near the yeah, border exactly. there. And you'd also, you know, have been a writer for most of your life, short stories, novels. Do you feel like the process of writing immediately transformed itself into storytelling for you, or was it a real shift?
I think they're all part and parcel of the same thing. You know, storytelling is more immediate. Most of the time, there's a time limit on a story you're going to tell in public. You're not going to go on for hours and hours. I mean, there are venues where people get up and do a whole performance like a play for 90 minutes, but most of the time you have 5 to 7 to 8 minutes to tell a story. So you really want to hone that story so that it's exciting for the audience and so they get what you're trying to tell them in that short period of time.
Yes, and a little bit later this evening you're going to tell one of your stories.
I am.
Which is pretty exciting. You also helped found a storytelling festival. You really hit the ground running. You went from novice storyteller to professional to founding a storytelling festival. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
It was so fun. We just happened to be in San Miguel de Allende, and we...
Wait, let's stop for a second. Tell folks where that is.
That is in Guanajuato, Mexico. It's a UNESCO heritage town, extremely beautiful, 4 hours north of Mexico City. And there are now a lot of Americans and Canadians who go there either permanently or for the dreadful winter months where they can lie in the sun and eat wonderful food and have a great time. So we were at a folk art gallery talking with the owner, and unbeknownst to me, she was a real powerhouse in the small town, and she had started something called the San Miguel Writers Conference, which is now internationally known. And she asked me what I did, and I said I was a storyteller. And she said, oh, I wish we had a storytelling festival here in San Miguel. And I said, I can do that. So I went back and talked to my crew, and they said yes. And we sent her a proposal, and she said yes. And the next fall, it started. Now it's in its sixth year. The final performance is October 5th.
So it's every fall, and storytellers, are they local to San Miguel, or do they come from other places?
They're mostly local, but we do have some foreign storytellers who fly down and come and tell a tale now and then.
And I understand that it started out as an English, entirely English-speaking festival, and has now become more bilingual?
Yes,
is that the case?
We have a whole Spanish contingent. We have courses on storytelling for both English participants and Spanish participants. And then we have, a finale for both. Our goal would to make it really both at one time.
Yes.
But it's really hard. A lot of the American audience in San Miguel does not speak Spanish, so they are kind of lost.
For shame.
Yeah, it
well,
is a shame.
Well, hopefully this will in some way, inspire a little bit more, cross-pollination.
It's true.
Or inspire more people to want to be able to tell a story in Spanish.
Yeah. I tell stories in Spanish when I'm there, and it takes about 50 times to memorize a story in Spanish for me as opposed to 15 in English, but it's very rewarding.
Have you actually done the math? It takes you 15 times to memorize it?
It does, because if you really want to get it absolutely right and perfect and be confident, particularly since there's nobody else who's American telling a story in Spanish in their festival, I don't want to be... an idiot.
A bozo.
So I feel like my cred is on the line there.
Sure. Well, when you're memorizing a story, and then when you there's the process, just like with, acting, in plays and stuff, there's a process of sort of synthesizing it, and then there's the moment where you actually get up and tell it. How often would you say you end up improvising in the course of the story?
Well, the thing about telling a story that's true, which is the type of story that I tell, is it's your own life. So you can always improvise, but you don't forget your own life. It's not so hard to memorize as if it were a play where you are waiting for the response of the person you're dealing with or the multiple people. So it's actually pretty easy to do, and I'm constantly changing a word or two, even though I would rather not, because I would like to tell a story with all the flair of Shakespeare, but that's not always possible, and you have to just give yourself a pass because your audience won't know.
Sure, that makes sense. And you have also done some teaching, is that correct?
That's true. I uh, teach storytelling for the University of Chicago Graham School of General Studies.
And how many students do you usually have in one of those classes?
Well, you know, when you're teaching something where you're dealing with the work of all these students, we never have more than 12, because then they wouldn't get enough time, each of them, to have their stories processed. So it's between 6 and 12 people usually.
And do they come from a variety of backgrounds or level of experience with public speaking or performing?
Absolutely. You do not know. You do not know. I mean, it depends when the university schedules the class. If it's in the daytime, they tend to be older because the rest of the people are at work. And if it's at night, then you get a greater variety of students.
This is a really dumb question that you can't possibly answer, but who do you think are the best storytellers?
Well, one of the interesting things is that lawyers make great storytellers because they're crafting a performance in the courtroom. And I think a lot of lawyers like to write, and they're sort of frustrated storytellers themselves. So
that's interesting.
I think they make really good storytellers.
Huh, very interesting. Maybe trial lawyers more than, you know, the corporate ones who are just doing business consolidations, perhaps.
True.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the time. We have our special VIP caller calling into the show tonight. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is There on WGXC 90.7 FM. We're broadcasting live from the Acres studio here in wonderful Greene County. And Drake Hamble, who's a very talented performer, writer, director, actor, storyteller, is going to be calling into the studio. So actually, why don't we try, see if we can make contact.
I don't have her number, so you.
Oh, I thought you did. Okay.
No.
All right, I thought I had it in there. So yeah, just give us a moment. We'll be pretty soon. But anyway, Dre was one of the storytellers on. I thought it was in there.
No.
In the history. Mm-mm. Okay.
She actually won.
Yes, she was a story. She came down to the San Miguel Storytelling Festival, and she was the winner of the entire festival.
Yes, she was incredible.
That's pretty exciting. Well, she has a podcast she's going to tell us about as soon as we get her on the line. Let's see how the birds are doing. Oh, look at that.
Hello?
Hello.
Well, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah!
Hi, this is Alana Medlock. I'm calling from WGXC. Thank you for calling into the studio. Well, we called you, but, you know, same diff.
Yeah.
Are you on the street right now with some dogs?
I was just on the street with a couple of dogs, and I made it back in. And
they're resting.
I actually don't know where one of them went. Like, wait a minute. Where's that other dog?
I'm going to let our listeners know, full disclosure, in addition to all the other things she does, she's a professional dog walker. So there are, you know, lots of special creatures.
A crap load of things.
Do you have did you change the business of your dog walking entity?
Like the name of it?
Yeah.
No, it's still the walker. The walk of the town.
The walk of the town.
But I do have an Instagram page where I post pet pictures from the dog walking biz, and that's called Town Fruit Walks or something.
Yes, that's what I saw, and I think I wondered if it had a new name. So if someone...
No, I didn't change them.
Before we get into the real business... if somebody is interested, now you're based in Brooklyn. If someone is interested in having their dog walked and they're in Brooklyn or you know, nearby, where would they go to contact you about that?
They could go to the Yelp page, which is the walk of the town. And I walk dogs in Brooklyn and like the Clinton Hill, Fort Greene-ish area. Even though for some reason Yelp has me listed as Crown Heights, but it's the walk of the town. On Yelp in Brooklyn.
Fantastic. So we've been talking. Oh, sorry. We've been talking about storytelling, and Stephanie, who you know, has been telling us a little bit about the beginnings of the San Miguel Storytelling Festival, which you had a chance to attend. That how long ago was that that you came and did a story there?
Uh, I think it was 5 years ago I did the first one.
Yeah, I think so.
The first year that you did it?
It was.
It was 5 years ago, right?
Wow.
Yeah, this is the sixth
in
year.
In October.
Yep.
So it's almost the anniversary. That sounds about right. Yeah.
It was.
So you've been a performer for a long time, working in many different mediums. When did you first start to think of yourself as a storyteller?
I guess I've always been a storyteller, but then it became like a thing that people were doing as entertainment. And I have, been an actor performer for a long time. I've done stand-up comedy, and I became sort of disenchanted with stand-up comedy. And I kind of felt like storytelling was a good way for me to be funny and be real. It was a good, tool to sort of be able to be funny and not have to stick to the stand-up comedy thing.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear more about what were you disillusioned about with the stand-up comedy scene or process?
Well, first of all, obviously it was like always a lot of dudes telling crappy rape jokes and stuff like that. But besides that, I used to get super anxious, and a lot of people who were doing comedy were super depressed and really negative. And it was, I don't know why, it was very disturbing to me because I felt like I didn't want to be in that. I didn't want to be that person to be like going up and being like, everybody laugh at me, and then get off stage and like, I hate my life. It just didn't, I didn't feel good about it. So I sort of just focused more on acting and theater.
Sure. That's really, yeah. I've never thought of it quite in that light, but it's really true. There's a whole sort of culture around a certain kind of, I don't know. I mean, of course, embracing imperfection, which is a good thing, but embracing a sort of, or wallowing in a certain, maybe, depending on who you are,
yeah,
a certain kind of dysfunction.
Just felt like this schism. And I do think stand-up has changed dramatically. There's still problematic stuff that goes on, but the culture of it has changed a lot, and who's being centered, and there's still a lot of controversy, but I think it's really great.
Yeah, there's a lot of different voices, and
yeah,
for sure.
It makes me happy. I don't only have to do, like, I do stand-up once in a while now, and it used to be like, you have to do a gay show, and now it's like, do any show.
Right on. So you have a storytelling, regular storytelling event that you host. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So I've been hosting and curating this queer storytelling show for 5 years. At the amazing queer bookstore called BGSQD, the Bureau of General Services Queer Division, and which is inside the LGBTQIA. It's pretty much every letter in the alphabet.
It's pretty much the best name that you could ever have for a bookstore, I think. It's pretty good.
So, but it's a queer bookstore and event space, and my show is the longest running show that they had there, and my show is called Tell, and I host it. I tell stories myself, and then each month, it's the third Saturday of every month, four people come and tell a story on a theme. Last night we did a show. The theme was self-love and re-speech, because there's like a queer section of re-speech that's very popular.
Oh.
So I felt like I had spent a lot of time at Re-Speech this summer and last summer, and I just love it because it's a very queer, centered space, very body positive. So
So it was kind of a hybrid theme. You were just like doing them both together.
I just decided it was like somehow it related. Usually it is like a more singular theme, but I felt like Ruth's speech was so specific. And in case anybody coming to do the show didn't have a Ruth's speech story, I just threw self-love in there.
That's awesome. It's joyful. I've been to that beach.
What was that? You've been, right?
Yeah.
Have you been to what I call the Gallia, or the Clear End?
I think so, but it was a long time ago. It might not have kind of solidified as much as it is now, but yeah.
So now my show is also a podcast produced by Brick.
And Brick is arts organization in Brooklyn, is that right?
It's a media company in Brooklyn that they produce like film and web series, and they do a lot of really amazing stuff, a lot of art. And they have 6 podcasts that they're producing, maybe more, and mine is one of them, and I just released the first season is fully out. I'm going to do a second season, and it's called Tell. It's on Apple and Google and Spotify and Stitcher, and it's really amazing. Each episode has 2 storytellers, 2 stories, and it's from the live show that I've been recording my live show for a couple years, and so we edited stories from that and made it into a podcast, basically.
So that's awesome. So it's
a little bit like The Moth, but it's just queer, you know.
Queer Moth. So if you're working in the studio listening, you know, to these stories that you've heard live, has it changed for you how you hear them working on these audio recordings instead of just being in the room, you know, with the live performance?
I try and be mindful because every time I do the live show, I'm blown away, seriously. Like, I after 5 years, like, I seriously, every single time, am amazed by these stories and the storytellers, but how it translates to someone just only listening, I feel like I'm a little more mindful of what it's going to sound like when you're not in the room.
Yeah.
So I try and choose stories that are encompassing, I guess, compelling when you're just listening, which is, I guess, and also just sort of representative of how diverse the community is and how diverse the show is as well. So there's like a whole bunch of elements to keep in mind in
putting
the show together, and some of the other producers have helped me with that as well.
That's cool. Well, I like the idea that the live show could inspire you to listen to the podcast, and the podcast could inspire you to go to the live show if you can, you know, because it is 2 really different experiences in a way, you know. One is very personal.
I mean, they are 2 different experiences, and actually, when I tried to self-produce with a couple of people the podcast, and they kept trying to tell me, Dre, the live show, it's a different animal. Making a podcast is a different animal, and I'm just really stubborn, and it took me a long time to really get it. And now that, like, it's out and I went through the process of making it, I'm like, oh.
Hey.
This is different.
Learning.
Because I'm such a live performer person. I'm not, you know, I just was like, I'll just put these recordings out there, you know, like, it's easy. But there's so many little things that go into it.
Yeah. Well, that's so cool.
As you know.
Yes.
As you know.
Just learnings. Still learnings. I'm still learning how to be spontaneous, which is the hardest thing. Or one of the hardest things. Maybe not for you.
I'm the opposite.
Yeah, because you're like an MC, so being spontaneous is not hard for you.
Right.
So you're the opposite.
Make a great team,
Lana. Yeah, what is it? What's the hardest thing for you?
The hardest thing for me in...
I don't know. That's a hard question in the world. In making stories, telling stories, whatever your format is.
I think it is planning. You know, and because I do kind of everything, like if I have a story, it's sort of all in my head. I just kind of am one of those people that's like, it's out there, I'm done, you know?
Right. So structuring and, you know, going through that process is harder.
Yeah, and working with other people who are interested in working in a different way, it's an adjustment period. And I feel like it's a big flaw of mine to not have be able to perfect and plan, but it's like a blessing and a curse.
Sure.
You know, it's like I wish I was better at that. But working on it. It's a lifetime.
Yes. So if
how
people,
about you?
Well, you know, that's hard. I mean, it's like sometimes it's focus and what I have to say, you know, the internal, you know, question, well, what do you have to say? Mm-hmm. You know, metaphorically or actually, you know, I struggle with that.
Right.
So, yeah, but I don't know. It's a process and radio is a great thing because it gives you a lot of different ways of, kind of entering into creative space that are different from live performance, you know, in a room with people.
Right.
It's a different animal, which is cool.
Right.
So I think we're getting around to, I always find in these hour long shows that the time starts to slip away. So we're going to move on pretty soon to hearing a story by Mrs. Stephanie Medlock.
Yay! Amazing storyteller.
So if people want to you told about where to find the podcast. If people want to go to or find out what's happening and when the live tell show is happening, what website should they go to?
They can follow Tell on Instagram. It's Tell Queers with a Z at the end. TELQUERZ. There's a Facebook page, Tell Queer Storytelling. And basically, I give information about both the podcast and the live show. The live show is the first Saturday of every month. The podcast, you can listen to all 6 episodes, rate and review it. Let everybody know, tell all the queer people you know that there's something, they can hear queer stories. And I have a website myself, draycampbell.com, and there's a little bit of information about how I'm there as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for giving us your time tonight between the dog walks.
Thank you.
It's very nice to talk to you. And if you ever are up in this area, maybe you can come into the studio and tell us.
Yeah, I would love to.
Cool.
Looking forward to hearing a Stephanie Medlock story.
All right. It's coming up shortly. All right. We're gonna sign off. Thanks so much, Dre.
Thank you. Enjoy.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Mama got a note here from the Harper Valley PTA. Well, the note said, Mrs. Johnson, you're wearing your dress is way too high. It's reported you've been drinking and are running around with men and going wild. And we don't believe you ought to be bringing up your little girl this way. It was signed by the secretary, Harper Valley PTA. Well, it happened that the PTA was gonna meet that very afternoon. And they were sure surprised when Mrs. Johnson wore her mini skirt.
tease away. And Mr. Baker, can you tell us why your secretary had to leave this town? And shouldn't Gwyneth Jones be told to keep her window shades off or completely down? Just a little Peyton Place, and you're all Harper Valley hypocrites. No, I wouldn't put you on, because it really did, it happened just this way. The day my mama socked it to the Harper Valley PTA. The day my mama socked it to the Harper Valley PTA.
Oh, yeah. Harper Valley PTA. Thank you, guest DJ Jeff Economy, for that track.
You're welcome.
Who is it by?
That was Jeannie C. Riley. That was her one big hit back in 1968. And it just occurred to me that the three songs that I've played were all made into movies.
No way.
Well, actually, no, that's not true. The Night Chicago Died wasn't. But it probably will be.
It should be. It should be. To for those of you who are just tuning in, this is WGXC Acra 90.7 FM, hands-on radio serving Greene and Columbia counties from the Berkshires to the Catskills and beyond, and also online at WGXC.org all around the world. We are having a very fun, unusual show tonight, live studio action, some friends in the studio and family. The theme is stories and storytelling. And Stephanie Medlock is here about to share a story with us. Hello.
Hi.
What's the name of the story that you're going to tell?
This story is called I Know I'm Going to Like You.
Okay. Well, without further ado, I know I'm going to like you.
If I were a dog, I'd be a golden retriever. You know, the one who sees you a block away and runs up, tail wagging, ready to roll over and have his tummy rubbed. And I'm not just friendly, I'm curious. I often feel compelled to ask total strangers why they are posing for pictures with a boa constrictor, or what they're going to do with all those mangoes in their shopping cart. What this means is that if you're one of those reserved persons who walks around with an iTunes thingy stuck in your ear to block any interaction with potential strangers, I'm probably your worst nightmare. How did this happen? When did friendly turn from being an essential frontier skill to socially unacceptable behavior? For me, my friendliness is partly hereditary. My dad was a friendly sort of guy, and partly experience. I'm an only child whose family moved from country to country for my dad's job. By the time I was three, I knew it was up to me to take the first move in making friends. My line, "Hi, I'm Steffi Wilson. Would you like to play with me?" While not sophisticated, was at least direct. With certain variations, it's been pretty much my opening line ever since. Because making new friends is one of the things I like best, so I'm ever vigilant about the possibility. I never want to miss out on a potential buddy just because I'm stuck standing in the security line at the airport. When I look around at the sea of faces on the bus, I don't see potential intruders into my private space. I see people I could be vacationing with in the south of France for the next 5 years. You never know where you're going to next meet your next best friend. Years ago, for example, I was organizing a conference on publishing education for the University of Chicago. I needed speakers who ran publishing programs around the country, and I called a bunch of them up and invited them to participate. One of them, Anne, arrived with her husband in Chicago, and when I heard her talk, oh, I was like in love. Once we had been in each other's company about 10 minutes, I suggested that we go out for a drink after the program, and pretty soon I admitted that I hoped we'd be friends. Maybe she was startled, but she said yes, and sure enough, over the next 25 years, we've flown with our husbands to Italy, and we fly to see each other every other year, because although she lives in Vancouver, Canada, and I live in Indiana, she's this wonderful gift in my life. Okay, you're saying to yourself, that's cheating. She's in your field, you have lots in common. It's a no-brainer that you might be friends. But honest, I've made friends with people hiking in the Peak District, riding the Metra, standing in line, even on the phone ordering from a catalog, and especially in my home in Indiana. Why, people are so friendly here that I made a friend once when I ran into a car and gave her a flat tire. I think the friendliest city in the United States is New Orleans. I say that from personal experience. I went to the jazz festival in New Orleans, and two women invited me home for dinner while we were waiting in line to use the porta potty. It just keeps on going. Years ago, I made friends with an employee in a liquor store in Saugerties, New York, who I was calling to buy a bottle of champagne to send to my daughter and her then boyfriend after they moved in together. This woman and I got talking, and she recommended places I could stay when I came to visit. And, well, we had coffee the next time that my husband went out to see my daughter. Well, at this point, I do have to admit something. My being friendly is not universally admired. My daughter as a teen suffered the torments of the damned when I struck up a conversation with some stranger while we were buying her a pair of Adidas. And I do have a girlfriend who complains that I have too many friends, and this somehow demeans my friendship with her. It's like, if you like everybody, then you really have no taste. But to me, that's like saying you should only eat steak. Forget sushi or fajitas. How boring is that? Being so eager to make friends does also have the occasional drawback. I don't really have the antenna for crazy people. You think I would be good at picking up those crazy people's signals, but actually I'm not. Sometimes, especially in travel situations when I'm already nervous, I so want someone to take my mind off the fact that I will soon be 37,000 feet in the air without any visible support, that my judgment deserts me. Like the time I was flying to Vancouver to see my friend Anne for a week. I'm sitting at O'Hare Airport in Chicago thinking, oh damn, 5 hours to worry about the plane crashing and nobody to talk to. So when this man comes up and sits next to me, I don't get the vibe I should have when his opening comment is, I sensed you before I saw you. Sensed? Saw? Really? How nice. And then he was off and running. By the time he had rearranged his seat so we could sit next to each other and he began to intimate that he knew we were made for each other, it was too late. I was trapped. Once we got to Vancouver, I actually had to call the police to get him to stop calling my friend's house. And even once I returned to Chicago, he sent creepy diagrams to my office that allegedly showed the inevitability of our life together. All in all, though, I've had way more good experience being friendly than bad ones. Why, you guys could all be my next best friends. If I happen to sit next to you on a plane, however, and ask you, hopefully, where are you from? And you think, oh, no, I just want to read my book. Leave me alone. You can let me down easy if you don't want to talk. We can agree on a little code. You'll say, I sensed you before I saw you. And I won't say another word. But you won't know what you're missing.
Yay. Thank you very much for that. That was Stephanie Medlock performing an original story right here in live in the ACRA studio on WGXC. This is There, a monthly program about performance and performance sounds. We have a little bit of time left before Tony Fallon joins us in the studio for The Irish Show. Another, whoa, where are the birds? As my brain shifts into another dimension. Oh, yes. The other thing I was going to share is that coming up in October, WGXC Hands on Radio will be having another sustaining supporter drive. We're in the process of building up our monthly base of sustaining supporters so that we can become fully sustainable. If you have not already, if you're a regular listener to WGXC and have not already become a sustaining supporter, you can check it out at wgxc.org/donate. Help us get a head start on our fall drive. And if you're just tuning in, check out the website wgxc.org to learn more about all the programs, all the amazing programming here on WGXC and how you can be part of it and support. Thank you very much. So thank you for that wonderful story. Where did you first get the idea to turn that experience into a story?
I do find that people are more reserved, that they really feel like going out in public is an assault on their senses. And it just occurred to me that I felt so differently about that it would make a story, you know?
Yeah. So it didn't necessarily start with the incident with the guy on the plane. It was more a general idea about...
It was just one of the reality checks about opening yourself up to strangers.
Yes. Well, it's a nice contrast. So how do you, when you're approaching a story, how do you sort of unpack it and decide what you're going to include or where it's going to go? Or is it just a like spontaneous inspiration?
Well, you have to, you know, your story has to resonate with your audience. It has to answer the question, why should I care? So in this story, there's a universal, and I mean, many people don't agree with me, but everybody has the sense of you either like being approached by people you don't know or you don't. So there's always something to react to in that particular story.
Yes. And for you, since it wasn't about so much about the specific event, but conveying a certain, you know, kind of outlook on the world, did you feel like there was a sort of desire to share a worldview
I wanted to say, hey, you out there who are naturally friendly and are holding yourselves back, I share your pain.
Well, I confess, yes, I was the teenager who was cringing and going, why is my mom so friendly? It's horrible. And of course, sometimes I didn't feel that way, but it is an interesting, you know, I think I've inherited your interest in other people and desire to connect with strangers, but I think I'm way more cautious. It's like I have to get through a couple levels of you know, comfort before I'm really, you know,
it's probably
ready to jump
a sane
in.
Approach.
I don't know. It's debatable. Yeah. It's debatable. Well, we have a little bit more time left. There's a gentleman, a very attractive gentleman sitting to your left. Hello.
Would you be talking to me?
Let's see if we have your mic up. Hello.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay,
hi. Hi. Hi, Dad.
Hey. Hi, Lana.
This is a family affair tonight. Thank you for joining me in the studio.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. So you're not a professional storyteller, but you have told a couple stories in performance, haven't you?
Well, I have to say, when I was sitting in the audience of one of those storytelling festivals that Stephanie talked about, there was a guy who performed a story about the guy who had no stories. And I thought, oh my God, that's me. I have no story. And so he said, at the end of it, everybody has a story. And so I thought, I must have a story somewhere. And so I spent some time mulling this over with Stephanie, and at some point a few stories popped up that I realized that I maybe could have the courage to share. So that's kind of
cool.
How I got started.
Was it frightening to actually perform them?
Yeah, I like the idea of being in front of an audience, but the idea of memorizing was, to me, felt very threatening. I've always been afraid to be in theater because I always feel I'd drop my lines, and I had this sort of childhood thought that if you make one mistake, it's all over. So you have to get it impeccable or you're in big trouble. So I was just like afraid I wouldn't be able to memorize.
And yet you did it.
Well, I did. Yeah, I got when I heard that Stephanie, when she did her stories in Spanish, she practiced them like 50 times. I thought, oh, if I practice a story 50 times, I could probably memorize
it. You can probably get it. And then did you flub a few bits?
Well, actually, I performed. I came up, we had on our back deck of our house at one point, I just decided to share. I'd been thinking about the story. What is my story? And I had a few of them that I shared, and I just kind of blurted them all out, and it was kind of really kind of moving to people and disturbing in certain ways. And they said, well, that was nice, Gordon, but I think you have about three stories there. So I parsed them out and eventually performed them at the San Miguel Storytelling Festival. And actually was one of the finalists in one of the stories.
So. Congratulations. I don't think I remember that. That's awesome. So, you know, I know we've talked a little bit about that in your work, as a psychologist. I'm just going to lay it out without giving out your bio. You are a psychologist, among other things, and a philosopher and writer and teacher. How do you feel like, or what do you feel like you understand about storytelling as it relates to personal growth and the things that you concern yourself with?
Well, it's interesting. One of the first story I did perform was a story called The Perfect Mom, and it was about my relationship with my mother. And my mother at the time had been in her last end of life, really, and she passed away in 2015. And I wanted to tell a story that recaptured my relationship with her. So it was a very personal sharing of who I was and how important that relationship was. And so it was... kind of blending my interest in storytelling with the fact that our lives are stories, and how do we tell them, and how do we capture who we are through the stories that are important to us.
Yeah, and I don't know, they're always changing, right? I mean, your internal, you know, idea of what your story is changing all the time.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that seems like part of, you know, what we're always trying to figure out is, what is our story?
Right.
What's your story, man?
I think it does change, too. I think people can get caught in their old stories that they tell over and over again. And the idea of creating the story of who you're becoming and what your own narrative is about that is something that I'm particularly interested in as a therapist and as a coach as well.
That's cool. Well, I wish we had more time to delve into this further, but as often is the case, the time has flown away. But thank both of you so much for coming and joining me here on the air.
Thank you, Alana.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And thank you to guest DJ Jeff Economy for sharing some tunes with us.
You are welcome.
Do you have another track to take us out on?
I do. This is a song by a formerly Chicago couple, Brett and Rennie Sparks, also known as the Handsome Family. The song is called The Woman Downstairs.
All right. You're listening to WGXC. The Irish Show is coming up next. Thanks so much for listening.
Chicago is where the woman downstairs starved herself to death last summer. I drank cases of beer and dreamed of lying down on the L tracks. The trains roared by under smoke, gray skies. Lake Michigan rose and fell like a bird. And when the wind dreamed up Ashland Avenue, the corner bars were full by noon, and the old stew bumps sliding down their stools. Ate boiled eggs and fed beer to the dogs. Thank you.